Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, August 18th. In the fireside room this afternoon is the presenter, Catherine Cummings Bond. Today's session number is 98-2, and it is titled Sojourner Truth. Let's listen in.
You are named as heroes in many people's lives. I am sure that when people name who heroes are for them, probably your name would come up. So when you hear this, think of yourself as heroes, then they begin the litany. So let's, I hope I can, my friend Ben's not here. Oh, I see Ben took the CD player. Well, so much for that. Okay, let me tell you just one more time what it is that I'm doing, and if you want to help, you sure can. I am a minister. And what I do is I have a ministry, which I'll tell you a bit about tomorrow night. But I also would love to do these women of strength and courage in churches and in schools. Because I think that, unfortunately, women in history are not known. Our stories are not known nearly as much as men in history. And although in the next last 10 years, particularly Sojourner and Harriet, who you'll hear today and tomorrow, their stories have become more well-known. But more as, oh yes, wasn't she a slave, rather than here's who she was. And what I love about these women are that they empower every one of us. No matter what our age, no matter what we're doing in life, when we begin to feel, guess what, there's no CD player. Oh, there you are. Thank you so much anyway. No matter what hardship you're facing, when you hear the story of Helen Keller, and then Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth, those three in particular, it gives you the passion and the power to find it in within yourself to do what it is that God is calling you to do. And I don't know what that is, but whether you're 5 or whether you're 83, there's still a lot of living, and I believe that God puts burning bushes in our way a lot. And my dream and my hope is to get into more schools to do these. So here are my cards. If you have any thoughts, please speak to me. If you have anyone you want to drop this to or any networking I should do to have that happen, please help me do that. Sojourner Truth is a woman who was a slave and she became a preacher. She never learned to read or write. And yet she was known as one of the great preachers of her day. She was born in 1797. There is a fable about her that I don't use when I do her per se, because it really is a fable. We're not sure it actually happened, but I'll tell you the story. It's a little bit risque. She was at a clergy gathering, and she was a large woman. She was about 6'1" or 2". She was an imposing person. And she could, you will learn, do as much work as 4 or 5 men in the day. And at night she could still do women's work, which is laundry. So she was at one point worth a high price for that reason. But she was also a very powerful person, you know, just had personal power, amazing amount of personal power, huge stature and personal power. So she went to this clergyman's gathering, and they didn't kick her out, but she was a little bit, I think, like the woman who came to Jesus and washed his feet with her hair and her tears and then dried them with her hair. Not wanted, very conspicuous, probably a lot of things being said about her. And she sat down here at the bottom of the pulpit, you know, in one of those Eastern pulpits. And the white clergy would go in, white male clergy would go into, clergymen would go into the pulpit and preach. And they kept whispering, you know, she's probably not even a woman. Because look at her. You know, she's so strong. She's so tough. She works like a man. She talks like a man. She's probably a man. And the fable legend about her is that she walked up in the pulpit and opened her blouse and witnessed the fact that indeed she was a woman. I don't know if that actually happened, but there is a poem called "Ain't I a Woman" that is written about Sojourner. She didn't probably write it herself, but that was what she said. You know, "Ain't I a woman? I've never been helped into a carriage by anyone in my life, but ain't I a woman?" and I have never had this happen, but ain't I a woman? So this is, I have to say, maybe my favorite of the four folks I do. So listen to the courageous and strong and amazing story of Sojourner Truth. The night was filled with stories. As Daddy and Mama recounted to us the events they had witnessed, my mama had seen 10 of her children sold into slavery. And she wept as she told the stories. She told the one about one stormy winter evening when the snow was falling. My five-year-old Michael, his little brother, he heard sleigh bells. So of course he went outside to see the sleigh bells. When he ran out to see the horse and the sleigh that stopped by the door, his delight turned to horror when all of a sudden he saw his little sister, a three-year-old little black girl, was taken and shut up in the sleigh. Her name was Nancy. He ran screaming into the cellar and tried to hide, but the slave traders got him too. So, my five-year-old brother and my three-year-old sister were kidnapped from my parents. Such stories as these convulsed in me a sense of dread, and I listened as I watched eerie shadows play their way on the walls of the place that we lived. I had learned at an early age that there is no security for the children of slaves. The world that my owner gave me was limited to this dank cellar beneath the tavern where we lived. Loose boards were just thrown over the floor with mud oozing out. They served as the floor for our slave quarters. Here on this floor, men, women, children, slept crowded on pallets of straw and tried to fight off rheumatism and palsy. But my mama expanded my world. She would take me out from underneath the cellar. She would take me outside on clear nights like we'll see tonight, and under a canopy of stars, and she would say to me, my children, there is a God who hears and sees everything that you think and do. I was overtaken with a sense of great mystery. Now, my children, she said, when you are beaten, when you are cruelly treated, you must ask for God's help. God will always hear you, and God will help you. And then she knelt underneath this canopy of stars, and we said together the Lord's Prayer, Our Father, and we would go on. Now, as surely as those fireside talks kindled in me my soul, can you sit down here? Thank you. Just anywhere. As those fireside talks blazed in my soul, those starlight evening lessons kindled within me the warmth of faith. Well, my mama's greatest fears came true for me when I was 9 years old. And I was put up on the auction block, and I was sold for $100. My thin and my bony frame and my lack of feminine charm were the reason for the low price. I spoke no English. I spoke Dutch, which many of us slaves spoke. So when they would ask me to bring them a teaspoon, I would bring a bucket. And therefore, I was cruelly treated. I was beaten many times. One morning, I was instructed to go to the barn. There in the barn, my hands were tied behind my back. And I was whipped with a bundle of rods until deep gashes sent blood streaming down my back. The scars of this beating stayed with me for the rest of my life. They were burned into my flesh by the hatred of a white man toward a 10-year-old black slave girl. In those days that followed, my mother's comforting words about God and the canopy of stars began to ring true. I began to pray for protection from my owners, and then I began to pray for deliverance. And not long after, God answered my prayer, and I was bought for $105. Now this new family, they were simple and honest people, and there I thrived and I grew strong. At 13 years of age, I became transformed from a shy and frightened young girl into a tall and a proud young woman. A nearby plantation owner saw me and saw promise, and he bought me for $300. My new owner considered me better than a man because I could do as much work as a half a dozen men in the day, and at night, I would still do the laundry. Well, my mama. I got to see her occasionally, about once, twice a year. She became very ill. And my daddy returned home one day, and he walked down into the steps of that cellar where I was raised, where the fire played on the walls, those eerie shadows. And my daddy found her dead. She was dead in the damp cellar, and she had died from sickness, from toil, and from an ending grief over the loss of her children, all 10 of them, to slavery. My daddy never stopped weeping after that. The last time I saw him was that he was literally sitting by the side of the road, lost in grief, disoriented, almost blind, weeping. Well, as a young woman, I never questioned the slave-master relationship. I believed that it was God-ordained. And I really tried to be the best slave I could be. I wanted to be an honest and an obedient slave. But I'll tell you, I did go out every day outside to that sanctuary. During the day, I would go out to this canopy of trees, and I would stand in the willows and I would talk to God. Sometimes they were angry conversations. I'm sure you have them too. And sometimes I would get on my knees and I would weep for my mama and my papa and my brothers and my sisters. But I kept my relationship with God, sometimes stormy, sometimes loving, but always passionate. I grew to love a man named Robert, a slave on a neighboring plantation. They can't take that away. Your heart still works when you're a slave. One time, Robert was visiting my family, and he was carried off and beaten for no reason. I don't understand exactly why, except they were trying to tell me that I couldn't marry him, and they forced me to marry someone else whose name was John. So I bore to John 5 children. I see a lot of women here, and I wonder if you'll understand this next part of my story, because I bet many of you are mothers and maybe grandmothers. But I had had it, and I knew that God did not have in mind for me slavery. So one night, at 3 o'clock in the morning, it was a crisp fall morning, I arose and I put a few articles together in a kerchief. I didn't own many things. A second skirt, a few things that I owned that reminded me of something sentimental, and I looked at my 4 sleeping children. And I looked at each one of them and I said a prayer over them. Oh God, be with Peter, and God be with David, and God be with my daughters. Oh God, help them to get out of slavery soon. And then I took my little tiny baby Sophia, who was still nursing, and I got her in my arms. And I bid my family goodbye, and I turned, and I walked away. I didn't see any other option. I didn't know there was anything else to do. But I knew that God wanted me free. I knew it down in the core of my being. So I got out. I got far enough away that I was safe, and I just got on my knees and I said, God. I was nursing Sophia and I said, God, you have got to show me which way to go, because I have no idea. I don't know where to go, God. And God did. God always answered my prayer. So I was led to a family, a Quaker family. You know the Quakers. If you don't, you should. The Quakers are the folks who really formed the backbone of the Underground Railroad. They're the ones that put a light on in their window and said, black slaves are welcome here. And you would have a place to stay and hide for one day until the next place you would go. Well, this Quaker family was quiet. And it was so quiet there, I was almost tempted to return to my former slave owners. But just one time, when I was getting ready to step into the carriage and go back to the home where I had known before, where they beat me, where they were unkind to me, I could feel something. Maybe you felt it too. I could feel something inside of me that was burning. It was burning, burning, and I saw that I was so wicked. And I felt this would burn me up. And I said, oh, somebody stand between me and this burning. And all of a sudden, I felt like there was something between me, like an umbrella. And I felt like it was somebody that was between me and the burning. And I knew that inside me, this something between me was Jesus. And finally, I said, this is Jesus. And the whole world around me grew bright. And I begin to feel such a love in my soul that I've never felt before, and I've never felt since. And then all of a sudden I stopped, and I looked out, and I said, there's the white folks. White folks have abused you and beat you and abused and beat your people. And I looked at the white folks and I said, God, I can love even the white folks. There came a rush of love in me, and I cried out, Lord, I will follow you. So I felt a call. I felt a call to take my message about Jesus to other parts of the land. And as I traveled, I thought about my name. Each time a slave was sold to a new master, they got a new name, and I was done with masters. And I've been sojourning for a while, so I thought, well, sojourner would be a good name for my first name. And my last master, well, I thought I better pray about it. So I got on my knees and I said, God, you would be my last master. Sojourner is a good first name. And you are the truth, God. So Sojourner Truth will be my name until the day I die. And so it was. Well, I couldn't read, not even the Bible, and that grieved my heart so. If I had one dream in my life, it was to be able to read the Bible. So I preached out of the text that I knew, and the text that I knew I called When I Found Jesus. My wanderings took me all over the country. As you know, the country was seething with unrest. Slavery was being debated in all quarters. And women's rights were being pushed onto center stage. And freedom burned in my soul. So I added my voice to the causes for blacks and for women. Because you see, I was, after all, a black woman made steel by the searing white heat of slavery and made compassionate by the tempering fire of Christ's love. Well, my persistent proclamations about slavery and about the rights for women created a huge throng of friends and an even larger number of foes who marshaled all of their hatred and unleashed it on my way. I won't go into the stories, but I was beaten with clubs more times than I can count, and I was pelted with stones and sent away from many towns. Well, the last election before I died, was in 1868. So I marched right down and I got in line. I stood behind the other white men. They had a lot of things to say to me. I just let them say it. I stood tall and proud. And I got up to the line and they said, "You're not allowed to register to vote." And I said, "Why?" They said, "Because of your sex and because of your color." I wanted them to say it to me. I wanted to hear them say it to me. A lot of things were said to me when I turned around and walked away, but I walked proud. Then, on election day, I walked right back into line, and I stood there one more time. Stood there, waited till I got to the front, and I said, "Sojourner Truth." And they said, "No, ma'am, you may not register to vote. You may not vote today." And I said, "Tell me why." They said, "Because you're a woman and because you're black." Here's the point. I kept a fighting and a trying until the day I died. The great Sojourner Truth did die. She died at 3 a.m. one morning, exactly the same time her flight to freedom from slavery began, years before. A friend came to comfort Sojourner on her deathbed, and Sojourner said to her this. She said, "I'm not gonna die, honey. I'm going home like a shooting star." And I believe she did. And I believe she's sitting at God's feet and cajoling and talking to God just like she did every day of her life. The end. I would love to entertain any questions for Sojourner. From Sojourner to Sojourner.
Did you ever have contact with the children that you left?
I did. But it wasn't for some years. It was very dangerous to go back to anywhere near the plantations where I was, so I had to stay much further north. I did see them later, and the informal way that we communicated was worked, because they would bring to me, people would say, "I was just down where you used to live, and I ran into so-and-so, and they said your kids are doing this way." They all four lived, and they were all slaves for a bit, and then they all got free. I got to have a different experience than my mother did.
What happened to the baby she had with her?
Well, Sophia grew. I went to the Quaker family. They were very, very good to her. We had a place in the back of their house, which was very rare. White folks rarely would let you have a place in their own house. And they treated her like one of theirs. She grew up with the best food of any of my kids. She grew strong and healthy and was by my side much of the time until she got to an age where she wanted to stay back in one of the places where we were living. And she had a lot of friends. She had white friends and she had black friends. A much different experience than I had. Tomorrow, I think a friend of mine, Harriet Tubman, will tell you a lot more about the Underground Railroad. You'll learn much more about that tomorrow evening.
Tomorrow's Wednesday.
That's right. And tomorrow evening, Harriet Tubman will be speaking in two forms. She will be here as a 12-year-old, and that's pretty incredible to hear what the life of a 12-year-old was like. My daughter does her. And stands in a flour sack and a rope around her waist, which was, they gave one dress or one piece of clothing a year for the slave children. And she tells what it was like to be a slave child. If you know of a child in the village, I would want them to hear that story at least. And then I will do Harriet as an adult. And Harriet was the Underground Railroad, the conductor. She was Moses to her people. She was believed to be the greatest, a most successful person in bringing the folks out of slavery to their freedom. But back to Sojourner. Yes.
Yeah, where were you growing up that you spoke Dutch?
Well, many of the slaves spoke Dutch. That was our really our mother tongue, and we wanted to keep many places in the South Dutch was spoken. That was what we knew. I came from Africa, and many of us spoke Dutch. And we wanted to keep that alive in our heritage. So all over the South, I actually lived in many different states. I was sold many times, and they would move me. They had no regard for where your family was from. Yes?
Are you a second generation slave?
Yes. My parents were both slaves. And it, as you can hear from my story, was very rough on my parents. But the roughest part of their life was to see their children sold into slavery.
What was your name before it was Sojourner?
The women are running together. I can't put my finger on it. Edith, it had three names. One of them was Edith. My first two names stayed, but every time I got a new master, my last name would change. So my last name was kind of transitory. Mm-hmm. It was changed many times, but something Edith. Forgive me, I can't remember. Yes?
Didn't you think it was harder leaving your children than having them taken from you?
It's a very good question. I did not come to the decision lightly. I know there are many women that could never do what I did.
And your children all accepted you after, huh? Were they
doing? They did. I don't know. I didn't see them within the first couple years. They could have been angry for years, and I wouldn't have blamed them for being angry with me, for abandoning them as they might have seen it. But I think I also was paving the way for them and for many others who were not my own children, so that we would find our freedom, because I knew God was calling us all to freedom. In the Bible it says that we are set free in Christ, and I believe that. So it might seem heartless as a mother,
Yes. Did you consider taking them with you?
Well, I did. Slave running with four little children would surely have meant that we would have been caught. They couldn't have kept up with me. And if you were caught as a slave, you were either beaten until death in front of other slaves so they would see the example. They didn't bat an eye to beat children to death. So I thought that would be a much worse fate than staying in the situation they were in. I thought about lots of different options. I thought about taking the two older boys with me. But you know, the dogs would sniff them out, and it's much easier to hide one. I could get up a tree. I could get usually into water, because the dogs couldn't follow the scent into water. And there were many nights that we would hide in a bank of a river, and I would just freeze holding on to Sophia in my arms. And when she would begin crying or whimpering, I could put her to my breast, and that would keep her quiet. I thought about it, and again, I'm sure it's hard for mothers to understand, but I think that it was the best decision for me. Yes?
Tell me about your ministry.
Well, I just was a preacher. I guess I didn't know many other preachers like myself, so it would be hard for me to even call it a ministry. But what I would do is I would go to a town, and I would walk. I had a walking stick, and I would send ahead sometimes the fact I was coming. In my days, I pulled in quite a lot of crowds. I was a good speaker. And I would go to sometime to Quaker churches or congregational churches, and they would let me speak there. Or I would speak out in the slave quarters where the slaves lived. and I would tell the story of Jesus. Many had not seen a woman, a black woman preacher before. And I would preach from texts in my heart, ones I knew by heart, and I would preach about the love of God and how God wanted freedom for us all and equality for us. The whole idea, I guess today you call it social gospel or social justice, it was just a part of the preaching that I knew from the Old Testament and from the New Testament, the love of Jesus. And I would preach everywhere I went. Sometimes I would get a place to stay. People would say, come home with us, sojourner, and they would give me sometimes a meal. Sometimes I slept on the ground. Sometimes I was beaten or stoned to get out of town. So it was nothing like the ministers that you know today. I was an itinerant preacher. Yes?
Who taught you to read?
Who taught me to read? I didn't know how to.
You never
read
the Bible?
No. I could read a few words. I could read the word Jesus. That's about all I needed to know, I guess. And I could pick out the word love. But that's about it. Yes?
You said you were sold for $100. What was the average charge for slaves?
Seems funny putting an amount of money on a person, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, $100 was little. I was at the time 9 years old. Most would go for 150, maybe 200. Much more money than I went for. But I made up for it. Well, I really appreciate your coming. I thank you for the opportunity to share my story, and I hope in the hearing of my story that you are able to do your life work and your call from God with more passion and more intensity. I look forward to meeting you tomorrow as Harriet Tubman. Mm-hmm.